evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. A vaccine is a product that produces immunity from a disease and can be administered through needle injections by mouth or by aerosol. Vaccines can prevent or ameliorate the morbidity from infection, which is rate of disease, in a population. Today we will look at vaccination and some of the steps researchers are making to discover new vaccines to prevent diseases like Zika. Recently, countries around the world commemorated World Immunization Week. The event coincided with African Vaccination Week, a time when African countries shine the spotlight on the importance of vaccination. The theme this year was Vaccines Protect Everyone, Get Vaccinated. In an exclusive interview with Voice of America, I spoke to Dr. Ayo Ajayi, director of the Africa team at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and asked him about the significance of African Vaccination Week. Take a listen.
Africa Vaccination Week is a way of getting high-level political consciousness and leadership on making sure that African children get access to to vaccines for diseases that we know how to prevent. It's a way of reminding Africans that we're not there yet, that we need to do more to make sure that we vaccinate our children, to make sure that we enable them to survive diseases that we already are able to prevent.
This is critical because the statistics say across Africa, 1 in 5 African children do not have access to the basic vaccines that could prevent child mortality. What do you make of this?
What I make of it is that, you know, we are not committed enough because, you know, the benefits and the impact and the effectiveness of vaccines are not controversial at all. What's even more incredible is the fact that, you know, as a preventive measure, it's the most cost-efficient investment that anyone can make, any government can make. Because $1 that you invest in childhood vaccinations, returns $44 in economic and social benefits. I mean, that's compelling. There's not many kinds of goods and services that give you that kind of return. And we think that, you know, political leadership is essential. If we get it to 80%, which is probably the best figures we have, and we have 1 in 5 kids who don't have access to it, what's stopping us from getting everyone? You know, these vaccines work best when everyone is covered. We know that. So it's what's important is making sure that we keep it in the public sphere, that people know to demand these services, and that the leadership, you know, is put to account to make sure that everyone gets access to them.
Very interesting, you mentioned not enough commitment and you mentioned leadership. So who is not committed enough? Are we looking at the leadership, essentially governments and financial commitment? What are we looking at here?
Both. I think there are many pockets in Africa where just the level of social consciousness and education about the benefits of vaccination, the ability to prevent children from dying needlessly, there's many societies that, you know, still don't feel very strongly about, you know, demanding those services. I think there's work to be done there. But I think, you know, in many parts, if we can get, you know, vaccine coverage as high as we have, and we're still missing out a whole lot of people like this, it's doable. Mm-hmm. It's going to be harder. But we have to recognize that everyone should have access to this. And that's why I think pulling from the ground up, in other words, communities where they feel that, you know, where children are dying still high levels of mortality, they need to put their leadership to account because most countries can prevent, you know, can vaccinate their children. And, you know, not doing it is essentially because it's possible for them to get away with it, I think.
Let's talk a little more about the type of commitment. If we look at the government aspect of things, a lot of time people have said that there is a lack of political will when it comes to whether it's vaccination or even other issues pertaining to health. Do you see a shift in governments and leaders' behavior in terms of how much they see the importance of vaccination, or is there a lot more work to do to convince them of the importance of vaccination?
Well, you know, I think the answer to both is yes, there's a lot more work to be done. But the consciousness is there already. I think you remember that a year ago, here in Addis, they got together to make pronouncements during the vaccination week when they promised to support universal access to immunization through what is now called the Addis Ababa Declaration. Okay,
yes.
So there's no question that there is, the energy and the effort to get to this kind of a declaration is important. But what's more important is what happens after that. I mean, African leaders are used to making pronouncements about things they don't intend to actually put a lot of energy behind. What's different about this is that, you know, this is not something that is controversial at all. I mean, this is something that government should prioritize, the same way they prioritize internal security, or for that matter, the same way they prioritize some of the most important elements in the country. It's doable. It's a matter of priorities. And I think that's where more political will is important.
Yeah, you talked about the Addis Declaration on Immunization. It includes 10 commitments and 4 calls to action. And it was endorsed by head of states on 31st of January this year. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think, you know, this is where I will put the blame. I mean, not blame, but I will put a little more energy and effort on the populace. The population have demand some of these services and bring their leadership to account. This is a good thing, making this Addis Declaration. But, you know, in many of the countries, they're not even aware that their governments have committed to doing this.
Mm-hmm.
They are aware that, you know, mortality rates have not dropped or significantly in some quarters. But, you know, the movement to call their governments to account or their people to account, that part I think we can still, you know, we can work more to strengthen. I think, you know, this is got to be a push and pull. The governments are committed, the political leadership are committed, but, you know, there's a lot of competing demands on their resources. And if no one is watching, they will keep this one too. And that happens from time to time. What we would need really is a ground movement that really, in each country, that pulls, that makes sure that this is in every budget, that, you know, their vaccine coverage programs is fully funded, and that whatever assistance they need in strengthening the systems for delivery to reach the most excluded people is also put into place. Those are the things that I think need to be done. But, you know, it would be helpful if there's something pulling the government, something that they, too, feel accountable to on the ground. I'm not sure we have that yet.
Now, going back to Vaccination Week, okay, to what extent are partners involved in this initiative and celebration?
Well, you know, I mean, I think just asking me here, I think it varies from country to country.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it would be important to highlight it in many countries, particularly those countries that still have a huge burden of preventable deaths from vaccine preventable diseases. I think it would be important to have, you know, to have selective efforts in those countries. But, you know, the idea of having a week of vaccination is to bring these up again and to have people redouble their efforts to put in place mechanisms to make sure that this universal access to immunization, you know, is a reality. A year after the declaration and so on, this is the time for countries to have, you know, very explicit plans for how they are going to make sure that, their countries actually get there. And remember that we do have this 2020 commitment.
Mm-hmm.
We're so far away from it. We're halfway through, but we're so far away from achieving those goals in Africa. Those are things that, you know, we should be able on the ground in each country to bring governments to account. And I think the private sector has a role to play in this as well, because, you know, the government doesn't cover everywhere, but I think the private sector also should be brought in to make sure they get their voices heard and make sure they strengthen the government in providing these services. I really think that, you know, in many parts of Africa, the realization that you can prevent unnecessary deaths still, you know, is something that we haven't strengthened enough. That people need to know that, you know, every death is potentially a preventable one. There are more cost-effective ways to prevent those deaths. And to do that, we really do need to have fairly universal access to vaccination and coverage.
As you said, we are far from there. We are 3 years away from 2020. Are we going to get there?
Yeah. we will get to 2020, but we probably won't get to those goals. Won't accomplish those goals.
Exactly.
If we go on at the current rate of progress, it's mm-hmm. just not enough.
And we'll have part two of our discussion on vaccination with Dr. Ayo Ajayi of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in a moment. But first, a brief summary of the latest health news with Kira Spirl.
Thank you, Lenore. The Nigerian Health Ministry has reported thousands of meningitis cases in the northern states Zamfara, Kebbi, and Sokoto since November 2016. This is Nigeria's worst outbreak of the disease since it killed more than 2,000 people in 2009. Officials have launched a massive vaccination campaign and are conducting house-to-house searches to provide treatment to those who are sick. Meanwhile, aid organizations like Doctors Without Borders are working with the Nigerian Center for Disease Control to contain the outbreak. Meningitis causes swelling in the brain and spinal cord and can kill within hours. The bacteria is highly contagious and is spread through close contact with the victims. U.S. health officials say the mysterious illness that has killed 13 people in Liberia came from a bacteria that can lead to meningitis. At least 31 cases have been discovered in the last 2 weeks. 13 have died. Samples from the four of the fatalities were sent to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention after Liberian medical officials were stumped. But the CDC could not say for sure if meningitis caused the deaths. Liberian officials say most of the 31 patients infected attended the April 22nd funeral of a religious leader in Sano County. Finally, government health officials in Mombasa County, Kenya, say more than 100 people have been infected with dengue in Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa. Authorities say the disease has spread to different parts of the county, with cases confirmed in major hospitals. Health authorities say students are most affected by the mosquito-borne tropical disease. Officials and schools are working together to clear the mosquito's breeding sites. In addition, an awareness campaign is underway to inform people of various preventative measures. Dengue is transmitted by the female mosquito Aedes aegypti, the same species that transmits yellow fever and the Zika infection. The dengue infection causes a flu-like illness that can be lethal. The disease is more prevalent in crowded areas that are unhygienic. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic is vaccination. And I spoke with Dr. Ayo Ajayi, director of the Africa team at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. In part two of our discussion, we spoke about some of the impediment to immunization on the continent and what needs to be done moving forward. So tell us, what are some of the barriers to vaccination on the continent?
Oh, lots. We talked a little bit about the political commitment and the leadership. Mm-hmm. Then we'll have to talk about the funding for it. Mm-hmm. In many of these countries, you know, the governments, they are not able to afford it completely. That's the role that Gavi was set up to fill. Some countries are going to be starting to graduate from Gavi. For those, it's particularly important to make sure that the domestic resources are available to fill the gap that's going to be left. So you've got funding, you've got political commitment, you've got the health systems in the country. You can only go so far as to the weakest link in the health systems. And in many countries, the health systems are quite fragmented and not as effective as they should be, which is why, you know, we still have to resort to campaigns in some instances. If you have a very good primary healthcare delivery system, you won't need campaigns as much as we often resort to in Africa. So I think, you know, the third issue I will talk about is just simply that governments get away with too much in this respect. That the communities should be a lot more vigilant about bringing their leadership to account for particularly promises that they make for the betterment of their populations like this. I think if we have those four things in place, we will be fine. You know, political will and commitment, adequate financing and resources, a very strong primary healthcare system that can deliver, mm-hmm. and a civil society that's ready to put their leadership to account, make sure that these things get done. It's not rocket science. It's doable.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps you probably touched on this already, but there is an increasing emphasis on immunization in the World Health Organization's public health interventions. What is your take on that? Why is that?
Appropriate is maybe a decade late. Absolutely. We should, you know, this is something we should have done, I think, but starting now means that 10 years from now, we won't be saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's how progress is made. Yeah, we're late. We should redouble those efforts. These things are not controversial at all. And I think on an individual basis, having healthy children makes it possible for you to focus attention on how you're going to provide for them so that they thrive in this world. It's incredibly important that, you know, the children are given the best opportunity they can have at these early stages of their lives.
Yes. And when we look at what is happening during African Vaccination Week, what are some of the key interventions, in addition to immunization, that can be provided or that are provided during the week?
Well, you know, I think what's more important is the public education at this time. Mm-hmm. I think many people actually don't know how cost-effective vaccines are. Many also don't know how actually their vaccine programs are funded in country. So, you know, the ways in which they can engage with it is not known to them. So lots of public awareness, but most importantly, many of those will signal to the government that the population is motivated and willing, you know, to take on the task of monitoring, you know, their country's performance in this international commitments that they make to their own people. So I think, you know, part of having this whole week is making sure that everyone actually gets access to some of the information about this that will help them to compel them to action.
And I wanted to have your take on your reaction on this news that was just released this week about RTSS, the malaria vaccine that will be rolled out in three countries started next year.
Yeah.
What is your reaction to this? What is the significance in terms of...
Delighted.
Yes.
I'm delighted. You may not know this, but I was vice president at PATH for 6 years. You know, during a lot of the times when the RTSS was being developed. And we had the first trials across Africa. It was 6,000 or 7,000 children back then. I'm totally delighted. I think, you know, the burden of malaria in Africa is just unbelievable. I myself suffered a lot from it when I was growing up. So, I think it's very promising. It's a particularly difficult vaccine to produce or, you know, disease to produce a vaccine for. But, you know, I'm totally jazzed up by it. Yeah.
Great.
And before I think it will make a huge difference.
Yes.
It's, you know, because it's one of the first generation of vaccines, it's not going to be the solution to everyone. So we still have a number of interventions that are very effective, you know, bed nets, treatment, full treatment with ACTs. Making sure that, you know, indoor residual
spraying. Yes.
Making sure that pregnant women are given intermittent treatment, and that all these are very, you know, all these are very important and effective methods. We shouldn't abandon them, but having one more tool in the toolkit is definitely going to make a big difference.
Absolutely. And Dr. Ajayi, before we wrap up this interview, let me have your final thoughts in terms of how you foresee the future with regards to whether it's 2020 or even moving forward in immunization to have a greater impact in the work that you do with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Well, you know, I think the importance of this week of vaccination is, you know, for me, is twofold. One is simply that for the diseases that we have prevention for, we should embrace them fully. There are new diseases that are emerging that we don't even yet know which way they're going to go. The stronger our health systems, the better coverage we have for vaccines that we have today, the easier it will be for us to prevent, you know, to address coming tragedies. And there will be some. We expect them. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And so we feel that the importance of building a very robust primary system in the country that's able to deliver vaccines to even the hardest to reach corners is essential for what we're going to be facing going forward. But I'm very optimistic that we've made a huge progress. A lot of the basic principles are known. We know how to do it. We know how to start to mobilize the political will and the commitment to it. We've figured out some architecture to provide funding for the countries that are hard-pressed to, you know, provide coverage. We have to continue to do these things because, you know, the future is uncertain, but we do know that we're starting to see so many different and new emerging diseases. We need to be much more effective with the ones that we know how to deal with.
Dr. Ayo Ajayi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
And that was Dr. Ayo Ajayi, director of the Africa team at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We continue to look at vaccination. And as we touched on malaria vaccine rollout, VOA's Henry Ridgewell gives us a report on the progress on this vaccine. Take a listen.
Malaria remains one of the world's deadliest diseases, killing close to 500,000 people every year, mostly in Africa. So the testing of a new vaccine called RTSS has been greeted as a great step forward. It's hoped that 360,000 children will be vaccinated between 2018 and 2020 in Kenya, Ghana and Malawi. The World Health Organization's regional director, Dr. Machidiso Moeti, made the announcement Monday in Nairobi.
We're very appreciative that GSK, the pharmaceutical company that is developing the vaccine, will provide this free of charge for this pilot. And the vaccine will be assessed as a complementary intervention in Africa that can be added to our existing toolbox of proven preventive diagnostic and treatment measures.
While a malaria vaccine would be an invaluable tool, other methods remain vital in preventing malaria. Dr. Thomas Churcher of Imperial College London uses mathematical modelling to highlight the best way of killing or blocking the main vector that transmits malaria, the mosquito.
Currently, the majority of control is through the use of bed nets, but it's increasing fear that mosquitoes are becoming resistant to some of the insecticide on those bed nets. And so there's a chance that control that works today might not work as well in the future. And so what we need to do is we need new types of ways of killing mosquitoes, new types of bed nets, new types of drugs, new types of vaccines.
Global efforts to reduce transmission have led to a two-thirds reduction in malaria deaths between 2000 and 2015. It's hoped the development of a vaccine will get us one step closer to one day eradicating the disease, says Churcher.
Hopefully, one day we will have a vaccine that's good enough to be that silver bullet. But the current vaccine can do an awful lot, but it is not going to completely halt malaria transmission. And so, therefore, the recent studies show that it's partially effective and that that effectiveness wears off quite quickly over time.
The $50 million trials in Ghana, Kenya and Malawi are being funded through a network of NGOs and global institutions. Far greater investment will be needed to roll the vaccine out globally if the pilots prove successful. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And now we continue with vaccine. Lisa Schlein has the report on the progress of the Ebola vaccine.
The 2013 Ebola outbreak in West Africa killed 11,300 people, highlighting the need for a vaccine to get control of this deadly virus. Of 12 candidate vaccines, only one, which was tested in Guinea, reportedly has proven to be clinically effective. However, the chair of SAGE and WHO senior health advisor Alejandro Cravioto notes the vaccine is not yet licensed. Therefore, it should only be used under strict conditions, such as informed consent.
That means people have to sign that saying that they want to take the vaccine, and under the conditions that we call good clinical practices, we still have something that could really be of help in case we have something that could happen in the near future.
Cravioto tells VOA this vaccine could be a game changer because it has demonstrated its effectiveness and its impact in a particular setting with a particular species of Ebola.
It is important to keep in mind that we are not recommending, or SAGE is not recommending currently, and there's no evidence to recommend wide-scale use of the vaccine and to, again, start to vaccinate before occurrence of outbreak. We have no idea of the duration of protection that's afforded by the vaccine to start with.
Sage recommends the so-called ring strategy that was used in the 1970s to eradicate smallpox to deliver the Ebola vaccine. This involves vaccinating people who are infected with the virus and all those who have come in contact with them. This method creates a buffer zone or protective ring around the patient to prevent the spread of infection. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And finally, in vaccine research, VOA's Jessica Bergman takes a look at the Zika vaccine development.
The so-called mRNA vaccines use genetic material from the Zika virus to protect against the mosquito-borne illness. It stands for messenger RNA, which in the body is tasked with translating DNA, the blueprint for life, into proteins that carry out various biological functions. The mRNA vaccine is different from others that stimulate the immune system by using weakened or killed pathogens. Drew Weissman is an mRNA vaccinologist at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. He developed the vaccine in collaboration with researchers at a number of institutions. Weissman and colleagues modified tiny strands of viral RNA that hold the genetic codes for making Zika viral proteins. While RNA that's simply injected into the body may be recognized by the immune system as foreign and swept away, the scientists developed a delivery system for the mRNA vaccine that allows it to slip unnoticed into cells where the genetic machinery quietly makes viral proteins. These harmless proteins enhance the immune system so it's primed to recognize and destroy a Zika infection if one is encountered. Weissman says all people would be vaccinated against the virus in areas where Zika is endemic. A single shot of the vaccine protected mice and macaque monkeys for an extended period of time after they were exposed to Zika, Weissman said.
What we saw, and we looked at both mice and macaques, is that we could give a single dose, and very low dose, of modified RNA and get complete protection. And in mice, we looked out to 5 months, and the protection remained potent at 5 months after a single immunization.
In monkeys, the vaccine has only been observed for 5 weeks, but the protection seems to be holding. The study was published in the journal Nature. Weissman's vaccine was made from a Zika virus strain isolated in a 2013 outbreak. The mosquito-borne illness has hit the hardest in Latin America, causing birth defects in the babies of pregnant women. If all goes according to plan, a single shot of the mRNA vaccine is all that would be needed for protection against Zika.
So I think the great advantage is that, unlike other vaccines described so far, you could go into a country or a region and give a single immunization and be done. So it doesn't require any infrastructure to track down people that didn't receive a second immunization. It doesn't require a second immunization. So it's going to be much easier and much cheaper to vaccinate a large area.
Weissman hopes to begin clinical trials of the mRNA vaccine in the next year to 18 months. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Dr. Ayo Ajayi, Director of the Africa Team at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. For more on today's topic, log on to our website at voanews.com and look for Health Chat. Also join us on facebook.com/healthchatvoa and let's keep the conversation going. Just look for Health Chat again next week on the program. We will look at how you prevent some common sicknesses. You can send us a question if you want to talk about preventing the flu or other common sicknesses. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi, Kira Spirol with the news, and engineer Vortech. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.